Well, hello.
Well said, well said.
What is the hallmark of electrical instability?
I like talking about cardiac arrest resuscitation and post-arrest care.
What higher authority could there be?
Did they benefit from early coronary angiography?
We've got to get these patients cooled relatively soon.
Welcome back to Critical Care Perspectives in Emergency Medicine. Mike Winters here from the University of Maryland School of Medicine in Baltimore, Maryland. I hope all of you are doing well. And in terms of this podcast, very, very exciting. It is such a pleasure to welcome a good friend, dear colleague, Dr. Amal Mattu here from the University of Maryland, also School of Medicine, to talk some cardiology topics. Amal, thanks so much for joining us on the podcast.
Well, hello. I figured I'd throw a little Seinfeld in there for you since I know how much of a Seinfeld fan you are. Well, thanks for having me back. I don't recall the last time I was privileged to enter your recording studio here.
So I was looking at that, and it's embarrassing to say that many of you who are listening to the podcast now know that we've gone through several iterations of website updates, and I honestly couldn't find the last episode. I know we recorded, but I couldn't find it on the updated site. I think those files are long gone.
Yeah, and we're only three offices away from each other down the hall, and so every time I come into the office, I see another litany of stars that come filing in and out of your office to do recordings. I think last week it was Angelina Jolie, I think, was here. So,
well, let's not go that far. Perhaps we shouldn't mention who those stars are, but it's really a privilege here to have you on CCPEM. I know many folks have written in and simply asked, when are we getting at Amal Mattu on for CCPEM, since so many of them follow you on Twitter?
Yeah, I think that was my parents probably. So.
Well said, well said. Well, tell us what you've been up to in the last several months and perhaps what's upcoming for you in the next several months as we head towards summer.
What's been going on? Just doing this emergency medicine thing, keeping busy with work and kids, end of the year, academic year. My oldest son is going to be heading off to college pretty soon, and those are the main things that have been keeping me busy, I guess. And in the coming months, just I want to put a plug in for the Crashing Patient Conference, which is October 1st through the 3rd here on our campus. As you know, you've been an integral part of that as well, along with many of other faculty. So I hope to see many of the listeners out there as well.
Absolutely. Looking forward to Crashing Patient. And for those of you that want to see the lineup and register for Crashing Patient, we're going to have a link on our homepage for CCPEM. But that link, is that up yet, or are we still working on that?
It should be up in the next couple of weeks. But okay. It'll be www.thecrashingpatient.com.
Outstanding. Well, for those of you that aren't going to attend Recess this month in June here on the University of Maryland School of Medicine campus, please do not miss the Crashing Patient Conference here at the beginning of October. An outstanding educational event, an outstanding experience, talking about some risk management and resuscitation. Well, let's get into our education topic this month for this podcast. And Amal, you and I love talking about cardiac stuff. Specifically, I like talking about cardiac arrest resuscitation and post-arrest care. And for you as well, our emergency cardiology guru, no one better to talk about an emerging controversy, perhaps, in terms of post-arrest care. And that deals with the aspect of sending patients who we have return of spontaneous circulation for early cardiac cath. And our discussion this podcast is going to be based on a recent article that came out in the New England Journal of Medicine just a few months ago, discussing some interesting findings on patients without evidence of a STEMI on their post-arrest EKG, and did they benefit from early coronary angiography. So before we get into that study, Amal, perhaps take us through where we're currently at. What are current guidelines? What are we recommending in terms of this integral component of post-cardiac arrest care?
Sure. Well, I think most everybody knows that back in 2013, the ACC/AHA put out their newest STEMI guidelines, which made it very clear that if you have post-arrest STEMI, so in other words, you have a cardiac arrest patient, you get their pulses back, and the first EKG that you see shows evidence of an ST elevation myocardial infarction, regardless of their neurologic status, the guidelines give that a class one recommendation for going right to the cath lab immediately, not waiting a day or two, but really immediate cath activation. So there probably shouldn't be much controversy over that. And that has largely been accepted in many other countries as well. And so if there are people out there that are still having that battle with their cardiologist, all you got to do is show them the national guidelines. Of course, there's a little common sense that you use. If you have a patient who's got, you know, terminal cancer, or they just have a god-awful expected outcome, then you don't want to have to put them through the pain and everything else, the complication rates associated with the PCI. So common sense prevails, but post-arrest STEMI, the default is go to the cath lab. A lot of the controversy back then came up with what to do with the non-ST elevation ACS patient. So you get the pulses back, you get a 12 ADKG, and there's no ST elevation. What do you do with that patient? Well, in 2014, the ACC/AHA came out with their non-ST elevation ACS guidelines, and that gave a class 1A, which is the highest level of recommendation, to essentially send those patients to the cath lab also. Now, specifically, what they said in those guidelines was that if you have a non-ST elevation ACS patient who has electrical instability, you need to send that patient to the cath lab immediately. And specifically, they said within 2 hours. And so in my mind, what is the hallmark of electrical instability? It's VFib, yeah, right? Or arrest. And they also said, as a class 1A recommendation, that if somebody has hemodynamic instability, that patient has to go to the cath lab immediately as well, within 2 hours. Well, what's the hallmark of hemodynamic instability? Again, cardiac arrest. So when those 2014 guidelines came out and gave class 1A recommendations to non-ST elevation ACS with electrical instability or hemodynamic instability, a lot of us took that to mean that post-arrest non-ST elevation ACS goes to the cath lab right away as well. Mm-hmm. And that resulted in quite a bit of fighting, I think, between our specialties, emergency medicine and cardiology. So the ACC, American College of Cardiology, published in 2015 a really wonderful paper that I think we've talked about before, mm-hmm, published by first author Rab, R-A-B, in 2015, Journal of American College of Cardiology. And that article was actually published on behalf of the Interventional Council of the American College of Cardiology. And you figure, what higher authority could there be than the Interventional Council of the ACC? So this really, in our minds, represented what the current state of affairs should be. And in that article, which again is a really, really outstanding read, they reviewed all of the literature and they reaffirmed that if you have post-arrest STEMI, take him to the cath lab. If they have post-arrest non-STEMI, you should highly consider taking them to the cath lab in terms of shared decision-making with your cardiologist. So you discuss the various background risk factors, what the downtime has been, what the underlying comorbidities have been, and so on. And based on those, you decide whether to go to the cath lab or not. And one of the things that they really endorsed was this concept that if a patient has an initial post-arrest rhythm of VFib, then that is a very strong predictor that the patient had an acute coronary occlusion, and they really pushed towards going to the cath lab. And that's what we're going to get into. So again, if somebody has non-ST elevation on the EKG, but their initial rhythm was VFib, or pulseless VTAC, a shockable rhythm, then there was a very strong push in that article to push this patient up to the cath lab. And that article largely became kind of the standard way a lot of us are practicing. As you know, we presented that article to our cardiology group, mm-hmm, and that article's algorithm was pretty much adopted instantly across our entire 14 hospital network. And our cardiologists, even now, if you tell them that we got a patient back and their initial rhythm was VFib, they pretty much support taking that patient to the cath lab. And so that's where we have been. And again, just to put numbers on some of this, if the post-arrest EKG shows STEMI, there's a 70 to 80% likelihood your patient has an acute coronary occlusion. If there's no evidence of STEMI, it's maybe 25 to 35% likelihood, which is still pretty reasonable to send that patient to the cath lab.
Agreed.
So that's where we have been. And then we move forward towards this article in the New England Journal.
And to bring everybody up to speed, that article was published online in March of 2019. The lead author is Dr. Lemkis, and the title is Coronary Angiography After Cardiac Arrest Without ST Segment Elevation, the COACT trial. So I'll kind of go through the key things in terms of the study and its findings of this particular latest article on cath in patients without ST segment elevation.
Sure. So first of all, let me just say this is a really well done article. So kudos to the authors for being able to get this done and published in a high-end journal for sure. This was a multi-center, open-label study from the Netherlands, and we'll get to why that might be important. It took over 550 patients with an initial shockable rhythm. So these were all VFib or pulseless VTAC patients post-arrest. So the very patients that we mentioned just a few minutes ago are high likelihood to have an acute coronary occlusion, 25 to 35%. The very patients that our cardiologists also are interested in taking to the cath lab, those are the patients who were enrolled in this study. And they were randomized then to either immediate cath or delayed cath. Again, to put numbers there, immediate cath meant that they went to the cath lab with a median time of about 2.3 hours, so pretty quick. And the delayed cath patients had a median time of about 122 hours, which is just a bit over 5 days. So there is a huge difference in terms of immediate cath, get them there right away, versus the delayed cath, get them there after 5 days. And one of the other points that's important about the delayed cath is that those were only patients that had neurologic recovery. So if they did not have neurologic recovery, there was no delayed cath.
Okay.
And that's a little bit of a difference that we'll get into. The immediate cath patients, they went right to the cath lab regardless of neurostatus. The delayed cath were only patients that had neurologic recovery about 5 days later. The primary endpoint they looked at was survival at 90 days. And then there's a few other secondary endpoints, such as good cerebral performance at 90 days and a few other things. But cutting to the chase, what they found was that 90-day survival was about 64.5% in the immediate cath group and 67% in the delayed cath group, essentially no significant difference between the two groups. So in this study, it would, and also no significant difference in the secondary endpoints either. So in this study, it would appear that there's really no difference in these post-arrest VFib patients about whether they should go to the cath lab immediately versus go to the cath lab 5 days later with neurologic recovery.
So very, very important findings in this multi-center study. Now, in terms of any study that we talk about, I'm sure there has to be some limitations and perhaps some shortcomings of the article. So before we get to what we should be doing now, what are some of the key findings or limitations that everyone needs to be aware of with the COAC trial?
Well, again, I think this is a really good study, and they did only look at the post-arrest VFib or pulseless VTAC as the initial rhythm type of patients. I looked at the study and kind of wondered, well, what about the PEA patients? What about the Brady asystole patients? They didn't really look at what the downtime was or whether there's any bystander CPR. So those are all questions that are in my mind moving forward and might be grounds for future studies. But in terms of this one study, there's a couple of things that I would point out as shortcomings. And also, there was an accompanying editorial that pointed out a couple of these as well. First of all, they really didn't take into account the history of present illness. So they didn't take into account, for example, did the patient have severe chest pain and diaphoresis right before they went down? That would make me worry more about ACS. And to me, that would be more likely an acute coronary occlusion. They didn't really take into account, was this patient suffering from severe shortness of breath as they got off a transatlantic flight? Mm-hmm. You know, that's an extreme example.
Yeah.
But sometimes that history of present illness can really be helpful in terms of deciding who goes to the cath lab. If somebody's having severe shortness of breath and they've got PE risk factors, I'm not thinking about sending them to the cath lab. If somebody's been complaining of bad headaches all day and then they go down, I'm not thinking about cath lab. I'm thinking about subarachnoid hemorrhage, which accounts for about 11% of cardiac arrests as well, and including some VFib arrests, surprisingly. So they didn't take into account the history of present illness. That might have helped. They also didn't specifically look at subgroups, for example, elderly. When you did look at the subgroups, you found that elderly patients, say over 70, tended to do better, but they didn't really talk too much about that. Mm-hmm. Also, patients that had a history of known coronary disease tended to do better with early cath. They didn't really make much mention about that. A couple of other things that are probably worth mentioning. Generally speaking, this is a relatively low prevalence population. And again, let's bring back into account that this study was done in the Netherlands, where, well, they clearly have a better system of primary care. And I would imagine that that results in maybe a slightly lower prevalence of underlying cardiac disease, and that could have affected the results. Just in terms of how that may have influenced the results, in this particular study, acute coronary occlusion was found in fewer than 20% of patients, whereas multiple other studies that have looked at the prevalence of acute coronary occlusion in VFib arrest patients without ST elevation is more like 25 to 35%. So this group of patients with post-arrest VFib had a lower incidence of acute coronary occlusion than many, many other studies. So it was a lower prevalence population. Another significant shortcoming was that there was a real delay in terms of the amount of time it took to get these patients cooled. Mm-hmm. And we know that of all patients that have post-arrest, the VFib patients have the best evidence to say we've got to get these patients cooled relatively soon. However, in this study, there was a real delay. On average, in the immediate cath group, on average, it took about 5.4 hours before they started the targeted temperature management, the cooling. In the delayed angio group, they were a little bit faster at 4.7 hours. And you just kind of wonder that if these VFib arrest patients had gotten cooled faster, maybe they all would have done better, certainly in the early group. And then the one other point that's worth bringing up, I mentioned earlier, is the fact that the delayed cath group were only taken to cath if they had neurologic recovery. And that can kind of skew the results also, because the patients that went to the cath lab immediately did not necessarily have neurologic recovery. They just took everybody. And chances are people that don't have neurologic recovery are going to be a bit sicker and probably not do as well. So the delayed recovery group in this study were more likely to have had better results because they only looked at the patients that had neurologic recovery.
So exceedingly helpful, Amal. That's an awesome analysis of this particular trial. And as we kind of back up and take more of a 30,000-foot view of just post-arrest care, we've talked about some major pillars as comprehensive post-arrest care. So optimizing hemodynamics, optimizing oxygenation and ventilation, initiation of targeted temperature management. But now, early cardiac catheterization has been one of those and is one of those pillars, especially for post-arrest STEMI. But we've done a lot of effort in terms of collaborating with our cardiology colleagues in these non-STEMI patients, especially within a presenting rhythm that is shockable. In light of this particular study, should we be revisiting those conversations? How does this study impact our current practice and the guidelines or current recommendations we started off the discussion with?
Sure. Well, my personal feeling is that this one single study probably should not change your practice much, if at all. If you currently don't have a set of guidelines, I would certainly believe that this study is going to weigh into your cardiologist's decision to be more reticent to start the cath on patients. Mm-hmm. So again, the published in New England Journal, I think a lot of the cardiologists out there have read this study or know about this study, and it's going to be one extra bit of ammunition, I guess, that they will use to say, no, I'm not going to take your post-arrest non-STEMI patient to the cath lab. On the other hand, if you already have a set protocol in place like we have here at university, I would suggest not changing that protocol based on this one study. There currently are, I believe, about 8, maybe 9 other studies that are ongoing right now with results that are pending or studies that are still ongoing. And so we're not going to have those results for plenty of time. In general, I would like to see more than one study before I change my practice on something. So I think this is very interesting. It was a well-done study, but there are some limitations. And I think before we start backing off any further on post-arrest cath, I think we need to see more literature.
Agreed. Excellent analysis. Before we wrap up here, any additional thoughts on this particular trial or just in general post-arrest cath?
Well, not so much. I think once again, for the third or fourth time, I have to give credit to the authors and say this is a really great study. And it may once again boil down to just focusing on the basics. A lot of the things you mentioned, targeted temperature management for the shockable rhythms, maintaining good hemodynamic status, maintaining adequate oxygenation, and avoiding hypercarbia. And when patients have ST elevation on the cath, you've got to really push them to the cath lab. And in my practice, I'm still a believer that if they have post-arrest VFib or shockable rhythm, I'm still going to push for them to go to the cath lab pending more studies.
Great. Well, Amal, I can't thank you enough for making the time to come on CCPEM here. It's really great to have you back again. I know many listeners are listening to you for the first time here, but so many listen to you on EM Wrap, so many listen to you on your EM cast through EMED Home and a variety of other podcasts. So we really appreciate you taking the time to analyze this latest study, the COAC trial published in New England Journal of Medicine on post-arrest cath. Looking forward to seeing you at resuscitation. Also looking forward to seeing you at the crashing patient, both of which all of our listeners can link to from our homepage under upcoming conferences. And if you have any questions, any comments regarding this trial for Amal or myself, please send us an email through the website. We'll be happy to get you any responses and additional references you may need. Amal, my thanks for joining us.
All right. Thanks, Mike. I think we just finished right on time. I see Brad Pitt knocking on the door now. So
time for the next podcast.
Thanks a lot, Mike.
Well, my thanks once again. This is Mike Winters for Critical Care Perspectives in Emergency Medicine. Looking forward to talking to you all on our next podcast. Bye for now.